Next, I want to talk about the trade balance. You'll often see reported in the press the balance, the trade balance referred to as the exports of goods and services minus imports of goods and services. And that's called the merchandise trade balance, even though people don't often think of services as merchandise. It's called the merchandise trade balance. Sort of, it's what we sell other countries versus what they sell to us. And what I want to emphasize is that this trade balance is affected by financial matters, by financial decisions. And the way that I'll get at that is, let's start out with a simple barter economy. And my main point is, in the barter economy, there can be no such thing as a trade deficit. If people are selling, if people are buying and selling things at the same time. So if we're in a barter economy, we don't accept money or anything else. We only accept goods and services in exchange for goods and services. Then there would always be balanced trade, because whenever I buy something, it is by selling something. If I want to get cars from Japan, I have to trade them wheat, and so on. So that would be sort of in a barter economy where, no one is willing to wait until later to get take delivery on something. Now, suppose we change this barter economy a little bit to have one country prefer to get their goods in the future than today. So Japan would like to get wheat from us, but they'd like to get wheat 5 years from now and not today. In that case, we would run what would look like a trade deficit today. That is, Japan would send cars to us, and we would send them in exchange promises to deliver wheat to them in 5 years. And then 5 years from now, they wouldn't have to sell us cars to get wheat, because they'd have these promises in their hands, and they would exchange those promises for wheat. So it would be like we trade wheat 5 years from now for cars today. Again, sort of in a barter world, that's how you could run a trade deficit in the short term. That is, we would import cars today, run a deficit, and then 5 years from now we'd run a surplus when we'd export the wheat. That's instead of just doing it all at the same time, exporting wheat today in exchange for cars today. So that's how, in a barter economy, you would do a trade deficit. And the insight we get from that example is that a trade deficit is borrowing. That is, when you run a trade deficit, what you're doing is you're borrowing. You're promising to pay back in the future. And a trade surplus, by that same token, is saving. So the country that is go that exports output today in exchange for output 5 years from now is saving. That is, they're running a trade surplus and saving. And the country that imports now in exchange for goods later is borrowing. So a trade deficit is borrowing. A trade deficit is borrowing. A trade surplus is saving. Now, the way that works in a modern economy that's not a barter economy is that when our country's saving rate goes up, that tends to push our interest rates down, which causes our currency to be cheap, and it leads to a trade surplus. So another way of thinking about it is that as we raise our saving, we start to invest some of our money in foreign securities, and that by buying foreign securities, we strengthen the foreign currency, we make our currency cheaper, and that makes our exports attractive, our imports expensive, and so we get a trade surplus. So savings going up leads to a trade surplus. Conversely, if our borrowing goes up, when we borrow more, some of that money we end up having to borrow from overseas, because what happens is our interest rates go up. That leads to foreigners willing to lend money. That makes our currency more expensive, That makes our exports more expensive to foreigners, our imports cheaper to domestic consumers, and so we tend to import more than we export, and we get a trade deficit. So when we borrow, we tend to get run a trade deficit. So it's the same principle, just without the barter situation. Financial markets are what take care, or where the saving and the borrowing show up. The saving and the borrowing, instead of being expressed in terms of wheat or automobiles, are expressed in terms of bonds denominated in different currencies. So, U.S. Treasury bonds or Japanese Treasury bonds or whatever. That's the sort of the medium through which international saving and borrowing takes place. But the same principle applies, that if you're saving, you're going to run a trade surplus. If you're borrowing, you're going to run a trade deficit. So right now, and for the past several years, our trade deficit has been about 6% of GDP, which is very large historically, which means that we've been borrowing about 6% of our GDP abroad. It's, again, a very large historical number. A lot of economists do not believe that it's sustainable. We can't continue to borrow and borrow and borrow. It's sort of like an individual running up a big credit card bill. But one point to make is that if it's a bunch of individuals that are doing the borrowing, that is, if we ignored the government sector for a moment, it was just individuals, then that's really their problem. It's whoever's doing the borrowing that's going to face the problem. If you're not somebody who's running up a big personal deficit, then the fact that our country as a whole has this trade deficit really doesn't affect you that much as an individual. The second point is that we're very lucky in that our deficit is denominated in dollars. Argentina, let's say, if they run up a deficit, and there, it would be great if it were denominated in Argentinian pesos. But when it's denominated in dollars, so when they're denominated in our currency, when Argentina runs a deficit in dollars, then they have a problem. That is, if the dollar goes up in value, then they have to work harder to pay back the deficit. And so that's so the way to eliminate their trade deficit is for their currency to depreciate. But if their currency depreciates, then the amount of then the in some sense the amount of money they owe goes up. And so their individual companies can go bankrupt just because their companies have these debts in dollars, and the dollars get more expensive. So if the United States had all its debts in euros, let's say, or pesos, I'll use euros. If all our debts were in euros and our currency were to depreciate, we would face a big problem paying back our debts, because our currency is cheaper. It becomes harder to earn euros in that sense. But fortunately, our debts are denominated in dollars. So if a depreciation of our currency takes place, and we believe that a depreciation is necessary in order to reduce our trade deficit from 6% of GDP to some smaller percent of GDP, or maybe even zero. So we need to have a depreciation of our currency. But because our debt is denominated in dollars, the people who will take the loss from the depreciation of our currency will be the creditors, the people, the foreigners who own our debt, the foreigners who have our treasury bonds, or who have our corporate bonds, or who have our mortgage securities. If you're in Europe and you're spending, and all the prices that you face are in euros, and you own let's say, a mortgage security that's denominated in dollars, and all of a sudden the dollar goes to sinks through the floor, your mortgage security is not going to be worth as much in terms of being able to purchase things in Europe, and so you're going to take a loss. So we're very lucky. Very few countries are able to issue debt in their own currency. Most countries, when they issue debt to foreigners, have to issue debt in the other country's currency or in dollars, in a major currency. So we're not necessarily going to be the ones that take the loss if and when the dollar takes a huge plunge, which it might have to do in order to restore trade balance. So one question is sort of why are we running this huge trade deficit? And that goes back to this issue of, why are we borrowing so much money? Because that, in effect, is what it means. Financially, why are we borrowing so much money? If we weren't borrowing so much money, we wouldn't be running a trade deficit. So there are two deficits that make up our borrowing. One is the government budget deficit, and the other is a deficit between private investment and savings. That is, our private companies are investing more than our private saving is providing. The personal saving rate in the United States is very low, close to zero. There's some saving that comes in terms of corporate saving. Corporate profits that are retained earnings are a form of saving. They're a form of private saving. But overall, our private investment is high relative to our private savings. So in some sense, we're running two deficits there, and those deficits are in turn what drives our borrowing and therefore our trade deficit. And there are a number of questions as to why this is happening. Clearly, it's pretty clear why there's a government budget deficit. That's the choices that are being made in Washington. But why are other countries willing to lend us the money to finance our budget deficit and our private investment savings deficit? That may be the larger question. Why are other countries financing it? Why aren't they, if they didn't finance it, we would have end up having to save more or invest less in order to finance our government budget deficit. That is, if we were running balanced trade with other countries not lending us money, then we would have to increase our private savings, reduce our consumption, or cut back on private investment in order to have balance. But anyway, why are foreign countries funding these large deficits? One hypothesis is that there's a global savings glut. That is, there are a lot of people around the world with money to save. You have the oil producers with a lot of income that they need to save. You have aging populations in Europe and Japan, so people are worried about saving for retirement. So maybe that's a story, that there's a global savings glut. And so with so much savings going on, people are looking for what they hope is a safe place to put their savings, and they're putting it in the United States. Possibility. Another story is the accumulation of dollars as a reserve currency by Asian central banks, China in particular. They're accumulating a lot of dollar-denominated securities. In the late 1990s, there were some currency crises in some Asian countries because they got very low on international reserves, and so there were runs against their currencies, sort of like a bank run. And so they may be overly cautious now in trying to accumulate reserves to kind of avoid having that happen again. So that may be one possibility, is that they've just been accumulating excess currency reserves, or reserves of not literally currency, but of American bonds, and they've just been accumulating that to excess. So there's been excess saving in that sense on the part of Asian governments. So that's one hypothesis, but it's really not clear. You can read more in the chapter in the book called "The Balance of Saving" on this whole issue. So another question this raises is, if this is not sustainable, if they're not going to continue to lend us more and more, and such a high percent of our GDP, What is going to happen? Is there going to be a hard landing or a soft landing, and does it matter? A hard landing would be a very sudden, sharp decline in the dollar. A soft landing would be a long, slow decline in the dollar. And so, you know, the question is sort of, is either scenario likely to happen, and is one of them going to be much worse than another? It's hard. I think it's very difficult to say. The effects of a big dollar decline are two effects. One's a wealth effect. We will feel less wealthy if our. What happens if our dollar declines is that the cost of foreign goods rises. So the days of cheap imports will be over in some sense. I mean, we'll still be importing, but not as much. So, and we will feel less wealthy as consumers. Conversely, foreigners might feel more wealthy, although I hesitate that the foreigners who are holding the American securities won't feel particularly wealthy because of the value of the dollar decline. But overall, foreigners will feel more wealthy, will feel less wealthy. The other effect that a decline in the dollar has is it causes expenditure switching. That is, we will consume less imported goods, and what we'll produce are more exportable goods. And and so switching from, and overall we probably, domestic consumer goods will be produced here and more exportable goods. And I think the economist's concern is with the so-called hard landing scenario is that expenditure switching sounds easy in theory, but in practice it means lots and lots of people have to shift jobs. All of a sudden the demand for domestic consumer goods will be dropping, and so all the people associated with those industries a lot of people associated with these industries will find they have to lose jobs. So people maybe in retail and in importing and so on would have to lose jobs. And our exports would be going up, and so people would have to find their way into export industries. And that may be, different skill sets, different companies, different locations, all the problems of transitioning from one sector to another. And that's why the hard landing scenario scares some economists, is that the process of shifting people from location to location, industry to industry, career to career, can be a painful process. It's time. It'll take time, and during that time, people will suffer from unemployment and just general dislocation. So that's the danger, perhaps, of the hard landing scenario. So overall, the key points here are that the trade deficit is driven by financial factors. It's mainly that we are borrowing a lot from foreigners, or that foreigners are anxious to lend a lot, and the place where they want to lend is the United States. And then that raises questions of how this will get undone. Will it be a sudden decline in the dollar? Will it be a slow decline in the dollar? And what will those consequences turn out to be?